Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
And now, the Action Radio Victory Lap.
Yes, yes, it's true, folks. Everything we said was true. It's all come true. You know, I've been watching the news and listening to what's going on, and, you know, the big highlight was Maria Bartiromo's report yesterday on the Sunday Morning Future. She had Senator Johnson on. She had another doctor. You know, it's amazing that she got beaten up and we got beaten up and I was ridiculed and my guests are ridiculed and Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits and everybody else has been on the show talking about all these horrendous things that, you know, that we were supposedly causing. And it's all a bunch of lies. We were right. We were right the whole time. So I thought we'd take a little credit today, kind of take a bow, have a little bit of fun, and let's welcome Shannon. Well, you know what? Gee, I forgot to play Shannon's theme too. This is. I get too many buttons going at once. So let me get to Shannon's theme. We'll get to her as well, and then we shall chat. She served her country in the Air Force. She swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And now Shannon Rice serves on the City Council of Milton, Florida. One voice, unwavering, still supporting and defending the Constitution against a wave of emergency declarations, lockdowns, and unlawful force. And all in support of the rights of her constituents and all Americans. She is Shannon Rice, and this is the Rice Report.
Good morning.
We were right, we were right. Nah, 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 nah. It's just amazing that, and I haven't played that guest of the, that's normally my guest of the day theme, and I haven't done that for a while, so I think it seemed a little quiet to me, so I'll have to check and see if that actually worked out, but it's just, you look at everything that's happened. I mean, we first broke the story. At the time, I didn't think anything of it. March 2nd, and I keep going back to that date, March 2nd, 2020, I found this study in France, Marseille, France, from Dr. Raoult, who talked about hydroxychloroquine is killing COVID. And he said chloroquine, which is the earlier form of it. And I thought, well, that's cool. And so then I read something else, Dr. Zelenko, later on. But the thing was, we knew. And then when the president starts coming out and talking about this President Trump, the real president, and he starts talking about, you know, slowing the spread and locking down and mask mandates and all this, I said, what was all this crap for? We don't need any of this. We got the cure. We you know, so we knew 2 weeks before the very first thing. And so my contention is that as we look more and more into this, the Dr. Fascist, you know, behind the scenes, that whole coronavirus task force, I think started with a playbook from Obama, you know, that was given to Dr. Fascist as a way to distract and destroy the Trump administration, you know, all during the COVID crisis that they caused, you know, by creating a virus that, you know, was basically their marketing tool for a vaccine they created previously, like probably 2 or 3 years ago, or, you know, before this all started. Anyway, everything we said was coming true. It's just, like I say, it's just nice to just sort of sit back and after all the ridicule, all the harassment, all the canceled, you know, the 30-day restrictions, to say, hey, we were right. Hi, Shannon.
Good morning.
Your turn. I've done my bit. I can go home now. I've said everything I wanted to say today, so I just, you know, okay.
Yeah, definitely an interesting turn of events. I still have some I ordered some quinine from Etsy when this kind of started out. It's still in my cabinet. I mean, I never had a cold or anything through this whole thing. But
you probably had COVID and didn't know it like I did. You know, I still go back to that December, January period for up 2 weeks when I sounded like crap on the air. I was working full time, working the show full time, absolutely exhausted. My immune system was at a low point. And of course I picked it up, but as soon as I had a couple of days of rest, you know, it was gone. You know, and I'm over 60, so I kicked its butt, you know, without any problem, just by getting a little bit of rest. And so it's interesting all the different, but the folks that are sicker, because it affects everybody differently. You know, things now quinine, is that a derivative of chloroquine, or how is that a different form of it, or how did that work? What's quinine in this case?
That's what I read way back then when things were going on. The quinine is like the base of it.
Right. I've heard that. That's what they have in India, you know, and for malaria in Africa, you know, they use quinine, and then I guess they use chloroquine, which is a more advanced form than hydroxychloroquine. I guess you take some hydrogen and oxygen, hydroxy, duh, high school chemistry, throw those molecules on, and away you go. Then you get a bigger one. I guess it's easier to take. But yeah, I mean, and all the work you did with mask mandates and, you know, well, let me ask you this. Was there any time where you had any doubt that the mandates that were coming down the chain of command, shall we say, from Dr. Fascist through the president's emergency declaration, which was totally bogus. There's no reason for that. To the governor, you know, our own Governor DeSantis, he screwed up initially too. I called him Dictator DeSantis to Mayor Lindsay in the chain of command here in Milton, Florida. You know, said, well, we have to do this. The CDC says we have to do this. And of course, the CDC has no power to tell you to do anything unless you're sick and flying into the country. That's the only place I know that they have jurisdiction. But was there any doubt in your mind? Did you ever question, say, no, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we should have masks. Maybe, or did you know, as I knew from the beginning, it was a bunch of nonsense?
Okay, so I'm not one to tell people what they're supposed to do. So it never crossed my mind to say that we should have them. So I could say no there because I'm not one to tell other people what they should be doing. It's a freedom issue for me. So a very basic one, a very simple one, but as far as thinking it was helpful, I didn't wear a mask through this whole thing, except for the few times that I wore it and I just didn't fuss about it was when I had to take my dog to the vet.
Gotta protect the dogs from COVID, I guess, you know.
that was the only time I just didn't even complain about it. In fact, I even took my brother's dog to the vet, and he wouldn't wear a mask. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just take her when he was visiting.
Well, yeah, and there are all times – that's funny. I mean, there are all times when we sort of, you know, comply with the stupidity simply because it's something we had to get done, you know. And so I remember you know, breaking a belt. and said, I got to go to, you know, like Target, like right now, buy a new one, right? And I walk in and here I get, you know, one hand holding up the drawers. This is kind of a funny story. Actually, I don't know if I should tell this on the air. Anyway, so I'm walking in and the guy says, you got to put a mask on. I said, what? Why? I'm going to buy a belt and get out of here. Give me this, you know, wardrobe malfunction, as they say. Let me just do, no, you have to wear a mask. Okay, you little twiddly. So I threw it on over my face for about, I think, 3 seconds, walked out of sight, put it down over my chin, went about my business, and tossed the damn thing as soon as I went out. So there comes a point where I think everybody has complied as little as possible just for something you have to do. But when it comes to the serious mandates, but I'm sure people avoided stores. I think Walmart, I didn't go to Walmart when they first started out because they had police out front. Idiots. You know, put a mask on or you can't come in here. Well, who the hell are you? What law am I breaking? CDC says. CDC doesn't have the power. Well, we don't know that. We're just following orders. You know, did you get that we're just following orders thing too? Did you know, remember that coming up?
No, because I just don't recall talking to anybody about it.
Oh, that's interesting.
I just
avoided
stores that were, you know, making me wear the mask. The one time that I went into Target, and I don't shop at Target very much, but I just looked at them like, don't talk to me, and walked past, and they didn't have me put on a mask. But it was kind of funny to me personally, because after I got in there, I got hot, and I started coughing, and the more I thought about don't cough, the more I had to cough. So I ended up leaving the store because I'm like, any minute someone's going to completely flip out on me because here I am not wearing a mask and I can't stop coughing.
Oh, yeah. The psychology changes with this whole thing. And that's what makes it so crazy is that everybody's psychology changes, you know, because not that I ever thought there was anything to it. I didn't. But the thing is, you look at other people and you think, what's going on here? And gradually more and more people wore masks. And now we're at the point, at least around here, you know, in the great, you know, panhandle of Florida, Santa Rosa County, Milton, Florida, you know, and we look around and there are fewer and fewer people wearing masks. And the people that are wearing masks, they're kind of like the aberration now. And you still look at them, it's like, why are you still wearing a mask? you know, it's quite fascinating, the psychology of this. But some people, you know, once they're convinced, they're convinced. And the biggest thing I found was age difference. The younger people are, the more likely they are to wear them, and the longer they are to wear them. And, you know, it's a crazy thing. You know, how quickly people got to wear them, now how quickly they're getting rid of them and forgetting that they ever wore a mask. It's almost like it's disappearing, you know, unless you see somebody with
them.
Well,
When I would, in the mornings on my way to work, I would see the kids at the school bus wear masks. And so now I'm really glad that school's out, you know, school's out for the summer. So hopefully they'll forget all about it. And not be in that habit. I mean,
we need a little Alice Cooper here.
Yeah.
We need some Alice Cooper. School's out for summer. Maybe get some heavy metal effects here. Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that? Did you remember reading that article recently? I think it was in Town Hall, where a bunch of parents, and I can't believe that I didn't think of this, and that a lot of us didn't think of this earlier. They actually tested the masks to see what was in them. I mean, we all knew they were stupid and didn't work, and kind of left it at that. That the, you know, the masks, the fibers are so far apart, viruses just kind of, you know, waft on through back and forth. But they tested them for, and they found all kinds of bacteria. They found pneumonia. They found all these other different germs and things. And these masks have only been worn for, and some kids are wearing them for like, you know, weeks, you know, maybe at least a week or weeks without being cleaned. They're stuffing them in their pockets and they're throwing them back on their face and they're breathing through this horrible thing. And it's becoming a petri dish, you know, and changing color and doing all kinds of horrible things. And yet nobody thought to test the masks until this family, these families, I forget where they were, Southern Florida somewhere. And then when they tested them after a day's wear, they came back with horrible things on them. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they're actually, go ahead.
I hope this doesn't come back. I just don't see how it can. I mean, and how can you argue that they work when it supposedly escaped from a lab where they would be wearing all this special equipment and it still got out, and then this little mask is supposed to protect you? You know, I get it. It made a lot of people feel safe, made people feel like they had some control where they felt they had none. But I hope this doesn't come back. I hope that they, in the future, take vitamins, eat well, do what they need to do to stay healthy and keep their immune system strong so that, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, but I hope these masks don't come back.
I don't either. And we know where that virus came from, don't we? China. a little delay on the action. It took a while to kick in the gong, but yeah. So, but quite frankly, I'll talk to you a bit about my theory that the origin of the virus is nowhere near as interesting as the origin of the vaccine. And that's where I think the real action is going to be. I think this whole thing about trying to find the origin of the virus is a distraction. I think we know where it is. I think we've known where it is for over a year. But the freedom aspect is interesting. And you mentioned this a couple of times, and I think you're right on. So as a city council person, as someone who represents, you know, your constituency here in the city of Milton, Florida, the masks, it was interesting to see it more of a personal choice. It's a freedom issue, and it's, you know, whether someone wants to or not, the state has no business, or the city has no business in mandating it. You know, whereas I look at it as a constitutional issue, that the state has no ability to require them at all. Because it's, you know, you don't give up your constitutional rights even in a pandemic. And the biggest thing that has bothered me about this entire thing is the willingness of people to give up their constitutional rights, thinking that a government can take them away. So one of the biggest problems we have is an education problem. But it, like I said, it's interesting. We come at this kind of from two different angles. Me, you know, constitutional, you can't do this. To you, it's a freedom issue. You know, if you want to, hey, you know, go ahead. So I'm going after the government. You're actually using government to keep people free. So it's interesting. You know, we're both trying to accomplish the same thing. It's just slightly different ways of doing it.
Yeah, and that's funny because I feel like I have been running block for the people. So that's interesting that you say it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is where we talk, because it's, you know, it's the subtleties, it's the gray areas, it's the ways we look at things that I find quite fascinating. Did you get a chance to see Sunday Morning Futures yesterday on Fox? I normally don't plug Fox because they're a bunch of, you know, raving socialists now. But Maria Bartiromo had a fascinating bit on, I think, let's see, where's it going to be post? I think I'm trying to get in the Action Radio group where I can send it to you. But do you get a chance to watch that tomorrow? Because it was amazing what she talked about.
No, I did not.
Okay, well, let me fill in the details.
Okay. Well, while you're looking that up, can I tell you one thing that I read this weekend that I was really happy about?
You can tell me anything you want. Please do. Go for it.
Governor DeSantis had pardoned anyone that had been charged regarding, I don't even know what to call them, the COVID violations.
Yeah, what's that, like wearing a mask where you shouldn't or not wearing a mask or what are some of the other things?
Social distancing there was a gym in Broward County that kept reopening, and they had charges against them for that. So he pardoned all of that. And then the Florida Clemency Board voted to waive all the fines. The only person on that board that voted against it was Nikki Fried. So don't vote for her for governor, because you see, obviously, in her vote where she stands.
Well, her record sucks. I mean, she's terrible. But she had a little controversy because she put her nice smiley face picture on all the gas pumps in the state, you know, and everybody was saying, wait a minute, it kind of looks like a campaign poster to me. You know, she was certifying that every gas pump in the state is, you know, doing the correct amount of gas, you know, when they say they are. When I say it's a gallon, it's actually a gallon. Okay, that's a good thing to have, that certification. But the thing was, her picture was there. And then it became more of a campaign issue. Yeah, Nikki Fried, you know, I don't know how she got to be agriculture, you know, secretary in a Florida, you know, conservative state that, you know, went for DeSantis and a bunch of other folks down the line. So that's a slight aberration. But, you know, when you think about that, how can anybody, and I'm surprised more states haven't done this, but how can you be guilty of a crime when the crime itself is illegal? You know, the when they're talking about, well, or making these things a crime, the state has no power to close businesses arbitrarily and decide what's essential and what isn't. They can't do that. The state has no power to put a mask over the face of healthy people. You know, I mean, all these things, anything that was done to a healthy person, or an asymptomatic person, you know, is blatantly illegal. You know, if you're sick, if you, you know, you get your due process, you go to the doc, you know, you're found sick with a communicable disease, you can be quarantined. That's what public health does. That's the best part of it. But the whole idea of, and we talked about this before, quarantining healthy people, you know, for who might get sick, maybe, that comes under prior restraint. That's unconstitutional on its face. So, yeah, you were protecting those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because I live in this state, but people are going to have to sue the government for the harm that's been done to them. So that's the only way they're going to make sure it doesn't happen again, is they're going to have to hurt them in the pocketbook. So it just needs to happen.
Were there any penalties involved in that? In other words, you know, along with the clemency of getting rid of the fines and you know, stupid things that, like that, were there any penalties for the bureaucrats who actually issued them?
I did not read about any of that. I didn't see that in any of the articles that I read about it. So, and I haven't heard about that. It would be great if there is. There needs to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you didn't hurt a business monetarily, because, you know, all these grants came down, so maybe some of them ended up being okay. It's just the stress that we've put on people, the government has, and that's not right. That why would anyone allow themselves to be governed by people that are just stressing them out and causing them grief? I don't get it.
No, I'm with you, and I don't understand the national tolerance for all these illegal policies. That never made sense to me. So, you know, we sort of have to go back to the question, what happened to Americans? I mean, we're the Americans who would act like Americans. You could have done this 20 years ago. You certainly could have done it 30 years ago. If you'd said to the immediate post-World War II, you know, fighters, you know, who just, you know, came back from Germany and Japan and, you know, won the war. And we say, oh, by the way, we're going to put a mask mandate on you. We've got a disease we think might be affecting everybody. So everybody has to wear a mask now. Do you think those guys would have worn a mask? No.
No. And I tell you, it's so frustrating because it's my generation right now that in large part supported this, Gen X. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we were known as the generation that didn't, you know, that were rebellious. So why did Generation X just roll over? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the boomers were a little more feisty. Because, you know, boomers, you still remember the 50s. You remember rock and roll, you know, original. Well, I'm a 50s kid, you know, near the end of it. But, you know, still, I can still lay claim to being a baby boomer. It's interesting that as the different generations go, they become much more accepting of authority. You know, I work with a bunch of kids on a part-time job, and the last people to, when the masks became voluntary, the last ones to take them off were you know, the high school and the immediate post-high school kids. The college kids took them off fairly quickly, you know, but the high school, you know, this like this dividing line around 18 to 20, where people were very accepting. I guess they're used to being in school and used to being told what to do, but you know, once you're an adult, you sort of think, I don't have to do this. Yay, you know, and I never wore one. It's like the older people were, the less tolerant they were of these things, because I guess the more we'd seen and the more we realized that government, you know, government survives by compliance. I mean, they really do. And it's fascinating, you know, that if we had mass uncompliance with these stupid laws and these, you know, lockdowns and everything else, you know, if half the businesses, you know, who were judged non-essential said, screw you, we're staying open, there's no way the government could have dealt with them. They couldn't have closed them all down, but because there are only a few patriots who stood out, you know, and they were made examples of horribly, you know, the other businesses knuckled under saying, oh, I don't want to be the one, don't come after me, you know, I'm special, leave me alone, you know, and they didn't realize that by doing that, by not supporting the businesses that did stay open, they basically condemned themselves to be closed. It's crazy.
Yeah, I heard of our city staff walking into businesses, and I got really mad about that. Like, they were going to go into the business and talk to them because to explain why they should follow the guidelines or how they should follow the guidelines. And that was infuriating because I'm like, you stay out of their business and stay off their property. And then I heard of even elected officials calling people on the phone here in our small little city. I wish all those people would come to a city council member and just put them on blast for all the ridiculous bullying, pressure things that they did to them. I mean, it's hard for me to find out. I can get, you know, little bits of information here and there, but I wish that they would come to the council and call them out.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, you should put up, you know, some kind of social media post and say, hey, if you were a victim of government oppression, you know, during the pandemic, which ended, you know, a long time ago, you know, then, yeah. And that's the other thing, too. See, this is where I believe it's just a vaccine marketing scheme, because I still have my screenshots from the CDC from July of last year of 2020, when the death count was heading for zero right about this time of year. You know, so it started at the end of January, you know, started the uptick, and then the height was April 15th, and then it immediately started heading down again once it reached its peak, because viruses do that. And then as everybody gets exposed, everybody gets immune, you know, everybody either has it or their immune system says is strong enough they don't get it, the virus has nowhere to go. So it stops, you know, being able to transmit. And by the July last year, it was basically done. And then they changed all the numbers, and then they put the fear out there. And that's the real problem. The real problem is not the virus. The real problem is the government reaction to it. So, yeah, if you can do any kind of synopsis or find stuff out or document, or people can come in and actually do stuff like that, that'd be great. Like, I'm looking at my screenshots. Let me see if I can find one right now. This is kind of fun. I may post it. I keep these things just because. Where have we got some? Oh, I got so many screenshots now. Hey, you want to help me sue Big Tech? I'm gonna go after them, and we got this new Florida law. So I'm thinking, this is cool. I want to use this. Should we talk off the air, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know how to help you.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean?
Well, in that case,
would I help you? Just sign.
I don't know. Join my lawsuit or something. I don't know what we should talk about that. But yeah, for those of us that that want to, you know, go sue Big Tech, you know, in Florida. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if the city of Milton will back me. Oh, here we go. I've got this provisional death counts from coronavirus, week ending 7/11/2020. And so if you look back at, is this thing still working? I guess it's just a screenshot, so it's not.
I'll tell you, while you're looking that up, I'll tell you something else I saw this weekend that I thought, that's so weird. I have a weather app on my phone.
Oh.
And when I click to see the weather, under the weather, it shows up COVID-19 information. It's like it's reporting it to me as if I want to know, and I don't have the option to, you know, to exit from that portion of the information.
But wow.
I kept seeing it this weekend. I'm like, that, you know, I'm about ready to delete that app. I'm not looking for that.
Here's something interesting. In fact, you know, in posting the show, there was a warning. You know, we have our Action Radio group. And if you look down, for those who are doing it, they have, in fact, you pointed this out to me, some unapproved COVID-19 treatments may cause serious harm. That's their, see, Facebook, as we know, and we always wonder where these things came from, that Facebook had this automatic reaction. That anytime you post anything with the word vaccine in it, they would put some kind of qualifier in there, you know, with a little Facebook sign, and they have a little message. They have a coronavirus message. Go here for more information. But when the vaccines came out, what they started with, and this we just found out, is the Zuckerberg, Dr. Fascist cabal, where they actually worked together on this to make a concerted effort that the only information allowed on Facebook was what they approved, which was pro-vaccine. If you say anything else, you get suspended for 30 days. But what was interesting is it now says some unapproved COVID-19 treatments may cause serious harm. Well, my first thought was vaccines. They're actually covering their butts on this. And then I thought, no, wait a minute, that means hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, all the things we know that work. What do you think?
Well, I'm just wondering why they didn't put all those warnings on the Tide Pod videos. So quick. I mean,
that's a good question.
They're so quick to, I mean, within minutes of me making that post about your show,
right,
that warning came up on it. Or not warning, or that notice, whatever you want to call it, that fake news came up.
It's the fake news, yeah, because the treatments work. In fact, all the studies are coming out and saying, this is why we're taking the victory lap, because all the studies are saying exactly what the early studies said. So, in fact, they're actually broadcasting the early studies now. A lot of these studies were done, you know, over a year ago, but they couldn't talk about them because they were so demonized by Dr. Fascist and, you know, the media, the this basically. And I figure all these folks are guilty of you know, mass genocide. So of the 600,000 people that lost their lives to either from or with COVID, you know, those that didn't get a chance at a cure, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, you know, any kind of therapy, steroids, all the things that they're using, you know, whatever particular doctors are using to cure it based on the individual cases, those deaths are right at the, you know, go right to Dr. Fascist, you know, Zuckerberg, Obama with his playbook, you know, the media. I mean, all these folks are guilty of killing, you know, huge numbers of people. So how are they going to be held accountable?
Well, yeah, I don't know how we're going to hold them accountable.
What's that now?
I mean, I just don't know. I don't know how people are going to handle it, hold them accountable. I don't know. It's pretty sickening.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and this is something that they didn't want to face. You know, but this is one I thought initially that Facebook was backtracking, saying, you know, some COVID treatments may cause serious harm. Well, the unapproved treatments are the vaccines. They're not approved. They're authorized. What's that?
Right.
They're not approved. They're authorized. Authorized under an emergency. You know, and so this could be taken different ways. We see originally, remember when before this it said vaccines are monitored for safety. And then before that it said vaccines are extensively tested and are proven safe and effective, which of course isn't true. You know, but the warnings that they issue keep changing. You know, it's like when the whole coronavirus thing came out, they talked about death counts. And then when the deaths diminished after July, you know, 2020, when they were basically heading for zero, they switched to cases. Well, a case just means, you know, you've got some of the virus in you. Does it mean you're sick? No. And most of those cases were false positives anyway. So the lies, the craziness surrounding this has just been amazing. But I don't know if you saw some of the posts on some of the other local sites, but I was bashed and ridiculed and called an idiot and a moron and dangerous and all these horrible, nasty names. And I didn't care because I knew I was right, you know, and that's a challenge when you know you're right and everybody, and you're the only person saying it, you know, but you have to really know right to do that. And I believe, you know, absolutely 100% that what I was saying was absolutely true based on my own and the best information I could find. That I was right and all these other folks were wrong. And it turned out I was right, you know, and all those other folks were wrong.
It's hard, but you got to ignore some of that and just know you have their attention and they're watching, obviously. They're listening.
Now, is this going to change anything on the city council? It's kind of funny here. I mean, I don't want to say I told you so. That's kind of terrible. But is there anything happening at the city council level? Are you going to be going back over policies and saying, here's where we screwed up. Here's where we violated the Constitution. Here's where we did what we shouldn't have done. You know, here's where the whole chain of command thing needs to be thrown out. And here's how we need to put protections on constitutional rights, you know, on the public health departments and the public health people, because obviously they don't understand that they are subordinate to the Constitution. They can't just say, well, we're declaring an emergency. We can do anything we want. Otherwise, we'd always have an emergency, and then they would do anything they want. And then, you know, we know what that road leads to. So
well,
mean
go ahead. I would love for someone to come to the city council and say that, and I will stand with them.
Anybody you can think of, like me? I don't know.
Yes. Come on.
Okay.
Because I fought and fought, you know, against some of this stuff, with especially with the local state of emergency. I didn't like some of the verbiage in it, and had people kind of suggest that I was being a little nutty about it. But yeah, come on, bring it. Come to the city council. Tell them.
Okay. And not just me. Anybody else shows up that can. You know, I sort of hesitate to speak of those things. I still want to do my show and be, and I'm not objective here, but, you know, I really think it's a place, you know, being a public figure, as it were. Yeah, go ahead.
I have to say, some of the people that were on the council during that time have resigned. So, and they're replaced with different people. So the vibe on the council is a little different right now, but we still have the same mayor. So bring it. Come tell us.
Okay. Let me think about that. All right. this is great. I have to let you go because I got Dr. Pryor on the line, but and then when we come back next week, we need to talk about July 4th and any other celebrations and things happening to actually celebrate our independence from, you know, if nothing else, those bureaucrats that want to take our freedom away and think that they can. That's the biggest problem. They think they can. And we have to teach them that, no, they can't. And that's going to be a process, too. Any closing words?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Y'all have a great day. Have a nice day. It's beautiful.
It certainly is. That'll do it. It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood. Sorry, couldn't resist. Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks. Bye, y'all.
Bye now. There we go. Shannon Rice, Milton City Council. Let's get on to Dr. Pryor, the National Security Report. I'll be right back. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pryor has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pryor is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pryor. So do we have anything left of our foreign policy now that Biden's given everything away to Putin? Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning to you, and a belated happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you. You as well.
Yeah, yesterday also happened to be my birthday. So
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Dr. Pryor. Happy birthday to you. There you go. Now it's official.
All right. Thank you. Well, sure. I'm not sure how to answer your question about if there's anything left of a foreign policy. Whose foreign policy? You know, the foreign policy that was followed, you know, since the X article was written back in the 1950s, you know, which one could argue, you know, the policy of containment, you know, which ultimately enabled us to prevail over the Soviet Union in the Cold War, and now we're in this new Cold War. You know, or the Trump foreign policy, which never really got off the ground because of the prosecution of General Michael Flynn, you know, who wanted to change the direction of our foreign policy so that we would have a better relationship with Russia, to try to split the Russia-China alliance, which of course the Democrats pose because, you know, they wanted to use the Russia, I don't want to call it a boogeyman, okay, but certainly the idea of Russia interfering in our elections was a lie. Mm-hmm. And, but it was used to undermine President Trump's legitimacy, as you know better than anyone. The trip to Russia, did you want to talk about that?
You've got plenty of things to talk about. It was just sort of an observation here that, Russian pipeline good, American pipeline bad, the Secretary of State, Blinken, and I was listening to reports, all week about people saying that these folks have no interest in our country. They're doing everything possible to destroy it. And we're in a weird situation now where everything Trump did made our country better. Well, maybe not everything, but I mean, most of what he did, the foreign policy, domestic policy, energy policy, things like that, were really great for this country. And that was demonized and found to be disgusting by the elites and the swamp and the deep state and all that. And now we have a total moron, who's destroying the country. And there isn't a single Republican rising up to say, well, we need to impeach this, if for nothing else, that he's incompetent and he's doing such huge damage. And no one seems to be, it's like the good was disgusting and the bad is virtuous. We're in a through the looking glass reversal of reality, or at least what that reality should be. I don't understand it.
Well, we're clearly a one party system in the Republican Party because of its leadership. I think most thinking Americans realize that as long as we are stuck with Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and these cowards and quislings at the head of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. In reality, I think for decades we've had a one-party system, and the leadership of the Republican Party has just been the junior partner with the Democrats in growing the deep state and in this transformation. They might not have liked it, but I think they gave up long ago in really fighting back against the Democrats. One thing that came out of the summit that's certainly going to be enormously damaging to our national security was the brief statement that was put out by the brief joint statement by Biden and Putin about how a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be waged, And people will say, well, how is that harmful? Another article I've got coming out recent that will soon be published is called an open letter to anti-nuclear activists, because I recently had a great email debate with a person from the Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Yeah, we talked about that.
One of the arguments that they perpetually use, to try to convince conservative Americans and moderate Americans that they're not members of the left, that it's okay to be anti-nuclear and to do things like unilaterally ban U.S. ICBMs, is they try to recruit Ronald Reagan's name to their cause. Mm-hmm. And they're always pointing to the 1985 Reagan-Gorbachev summit, where exactly the same thing was said, that nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. And, the Soviets at the time and the Russians today know that they can lie to us and get away with it through such public statements, mm-hmm. statements make no difference at all in terms of their nuclear buildup, their military plans. They go right ahead planning basically to fight and win a nuclear war. In the aftermath of the fall of the Soviet Union, when we got a chance to see their war plans, their actual war plans, for nuclear conflict, They did believe that you could fight and win a nuclear war. They planned to strike first. They planned the chief surprise. And everything we're seeing the Russians do today shows they haven't changed. But they know that Americans are so afraid of nuclear weapons. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be, okay? But the fear is a debilitating fear. It's one thing when fear drives you to do prudent actions, you know, to match an enemy's strength, because Reagan ultimately was right that peace through strength is the way to do it. You know, Reagan didn't like nuclear weapons either, you know, and he wanted to render nuclear weapons obsolete through the Strategic Defense Initiative. But he also knew that as long as the dominant technology was the nuclear missile, that the United States could not afford to be behind Russia. And we had more deployments of nuclear, you know, modern systems, the Ohio-class submarines, the MX missile, modernized Peacekeeper, the ground-launched cruise missile, intermediate-range nuclear missiles, the air-launched cruise missiles on B-52 bombers. All of that was introduced during the Reagan administration to close the nuclear window of vulnerability. But the way the left uses these, and the anti-nuclear movement will use these, they try to use it during the Reagan period, the public statement about nuclear war cannot be won and must never happen. And the way they're going to use it now, the way they are using it now, is to say, oh, the United States has got to set a good example. Since nobody thinks a nuclear war can be won and everyone agrees it should never be fought, we shouldn't be investing in nuclear weapons. You know, that building nuclear weapons is actually antithetical to our security. And give peace a chance. That's one of their favorite phrases. Give peace a chance, you know, by, for example, unilaterally dismantling our ICBMs, which is the next thing they want to do. And they don't realize how many times we've done that in the past, really unilaterally. You know, the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, for example, where we haven't tested a nuclear weapon in 30 years. And just last year, the State Department finally admitted that the Russians and Chinese have been violating the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty for 30 years and have gotten a 30-year they're ahead of us by 30 years in developing advanced generation nuclear weapons technology, or the Presidential Nuclear Initiative, where the sides were supposed to get rid of tactical nuclear weapons, completely abolish them. And we came very close to doing that. Our tactical nuclear arsenal went down from 15,000 to 180, just 180 obsolete old gravity bombs. And the Russians didn't dismantle their tactical nuclear weapons. They have at least a 10-to-1 advantage over us today because they cheated on that one too. And of course, the INF treaty, from which President Trump wisely withdrew, that is the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. You know, the State Department knew the Russians were cheating on that treaty during the Obama administration. But the Obama administration was so anti-nuclear, and the State Department is always the last one who wants to admit when a treaty is being violated, you know, because those treaties are their bread and butter, basically, you know, that they would not publicly admit it, you know, during congressional hearings. But finally, President Trump, you know, told the truth that the INF treaty was being violated by the Russians, and the State Department admitted that. And so he withdrew from that treaty. You know, we haven't built any intermediate range nuclear forces missiles yet. I mean, it takes time to do that sort of thing. But the Russians have got a big advantage over us there, too. So we have repeatedly given peace a chance, just the way, you know, the Physicians for Social Responsibility and Plowshares and all these other anti-nuclear groups want us to do. And over again, you know, the Russians, the Chinese, you know, the North Koreans, now the Iranians end up cheating on all these agreements, and we're the ones who end up having a weakened posture as a consequence of these unilateral gestures.
Yeah, but that has to be by design, though. I mean, it's got to be by design because, you know the Russians are cheating. There are a bunch of people in the various 17 intelligence agencies that know the Russians and the Chinese are cheating. The State Department, I'm sure, knows the Russians and the Chinese are cheating. The problem is not knowing that they're cheating. The problem is knowing that they're cheating and accepting it, or even helping it, you know, by disarming
yes.
our country. That's where the problem is. This is the part I don't understand.
That is the problem. And in this respect, to answer the question you began at the beginning of the show, at least in this respect, in terms of our foreign policy, you know, the area that I'm most familiar with, which is our nuclear weapons, you know, the foreign policy basically hasn't changed across administrations, even during the Trump administration. You know, because President Trump never drained the swamp, you know, there's a philosophy. These people do believe in giving peace a chance. The arms control philosophy is that okay, well, maybe they're just cheating around the edges. Maybe they're not cheating big. And if we just stick with it for long enough, eventually there'll be, they call it convergence. It's the theory of convergence, you know, that if both sides stay in the treaty for long enough and we keep talking to each other and keep negotiating with each other, that eventually the adversary totalitarian authoritarian system, at least in terms of thinking about nuclear weapons, you know, will move closer to our point of view. After all, it's irrational to believe that you can fight and win a nuclear war. You know,
that's
a lot
wishful
of
thinking.
The
that's
people,
not,
the
yeah,
people
that's not
who
policy.
Believe in arms control, yeah. The people who believe in arms control, the theory of arms control, do think that, oh, you can't fight and win a nuclear war. That's irrational. And, you know, and we've got to educate these guys. And eventually, if we, you know, if we stay in the treaty and just overlook, you know, cheating around the margins, it's always supposedly just cheating around the margins, you know, that eventually they will adopt our point of view and the threat will be alleviated. And that maybe if we have enough long enough friendly interactions with them, they will convert. They will become a free economic system and eventually a free political system. In fact, our whole China foreign policy was based on that theory, you know, that if we let China join the World Trade Organization, ignored the damage that was being done to our own economy and, you know, convince ourselves, oh, that's not economic warfare. That's just Chinese learning to become good capitalists, which is what we want them to be. And even encouraged and supported that. And it helps line the pockets of many of the people who were doing that, that eventually there would be convergence between us and China, communist China. Well, how did that work out? You know,
well, there's something else too that's been bugging me, you know, as you're talking, and I'm thinking these people either have no understanding of a dictatorship or they don't care. They're looking at Russia and China as if they were, you know, democracies. You know, I don't even like that. I mean, we're a constitutional republic, but we've got to get that back. But if you look at a dictatorship, the leader of the dictatorship has to be the strongest, baddest ass out there. Otherwise, he's going to get killed by the person who's next in line or closest to him. So by the nature of dictatorships, they can't stand down. They can't disarm. They can't do anything like that because the minute the leader, Xi Jinping or Putin, looks weak at all, then someone's going to assassinate them, take their place, and continue. So by nature, same thing with Kim Jong-un, I guess is his name. I keep forgetting which Kim it is. But in North Korea, that no matter who's in charge, if they don't maintain the strongest possible, you know, strategic armament profile defense, you know, someone's going to come along and say, you're not strong enough. You know, isn't that the nature of dictatorship that they are forced by the fact that they are a dictatorship to keep, you know, increasing their military simply because if they don't, so whoever's in charge is going to be dumped or killed and the next dictator is going to take their place?
Well, not only that, but I think there's another deeper difference in the strategic cultures between free systems and totalitarian systems. You know, you're right. The way these people come to power within their system is through violence, and they are maintained there by violence. You know, Kim Jong-un routinely executes even close relatives who are high up in his regime because he fears, you know, that these people may pose a threat to him. And so he executes them. And it is just, it is a natural thing for a civilization, a society. I'm reluctant to call North Korea a civilization, but it is, you know, under, you know, a system like, it is a natural thing for a system to project upon the world, you know, to say, well, you know, what I'm doing is normal. This is how all systems work outside my country, even the United States. You know, even the United States, you know, claims it has a constitution and its people are free and they're trying to negotiate treaties with me. And I don't believe any of this BS because I've got fake constitutions here in North Korea and in Russia and China. They all have fake constitutions and fake Bill of Rights and fake law courts, all of which are just cynical tools to maintain the totalitarian elite in power. And so they assume it's that same way with all the other outside countries. And that's the way the world works. The world works by being bloody and fang and claw. And the guy who has the biggest bombs, the best military, that's the one that's going to prevail. And they also don't believe in coexistence and getting along. They believe in temporary alliances as long as it advances their power. But in the long run, totalitarian states, that's why they're totalitarian. They believe in total power, total control. They fear any institution or any country that is not within their power or their control. And their strategic goal is to get control of that country or to destroy it before it destroys them.
They can't disarm them, basically. They can't disarm. They can't obey a treaty. They can't do the things that people are expecting them to do. So the fact that we're trying to lead by example, or as I call it, leading by wishful thinking, is so absurd based on the nature of a totalitarian government that couldn't comply with that even if they wanted to, because the leaders wouldn't be
lessons.
Leaders. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. And we should have learned, and we didn't learn, we should have learned these lessons back in the 20s and 30s, because basically we didn't call it arms control back then, but that's what it was. The League of Nations, the Kellogg-Briand Pact that was supposed to outlaw war, the Washington and London Naval Conferences, where the sides were supposed to, agree to limit the size of their naval forces, the Versailles Treaty that was supposed to disarm Germany so that it would never rise up again to be a threat, all these pieces of paper, that the Western democracies believed in that, you can coexist, you can sign a treaty, even with somebody like Adolf Hitler, and it will be obeyed, because in our strategic culture, you can get win-win outcomes. You can negotiate your difference. You can, as the Physicians for Social Responsibility bumper sticker says, believe in coexistence. Okay, and they don't, and they didn't believe in coexistence then. They exploited those treaties so that they got military. Postured themselves so that they were had significant military advantages over the West, and darn near won World War II as a consequence of our foolish belief that those treaties were real. They were only real to us because we believe in coexistence and we believe in the treaty and negotiation process, and we're making exactly that same mistake over again. And that's why it's not just a matter of stupid people, okay, that's one of the vulnerabilities that we have in our strategic culture, because our society, the way our society works on the inside, is we do negotiate our differences. We do believe in win-win outcomes. We believe in trying to reconcile our differences within our society, and we believe in contracts, and both sides will obey contracts and obey law because we want to go along and get along and coexist. And we
they
can't
get
us through our thick skulls as a free system. That doesn't work when you're dealing with authoritarian and totalitarian powers that do not share our values, that have radically different alien strategic cultures that are just the opposite of ours. Yeah. So we end up making the same mistakes over and over again. And it also doesn't help that, at least in the past, like during the Cold War, when we weren't doing so badly, we did, after all, win the Cold War. Back in those days, that we were blessed to have the Great Generation, that survived the Great Depression and fought and won World War II, and had the experience of that war under their belts, in their minds, okay, so that they had seen how Hitler and Mussolini and Tojo, how Imperial Japan had cheated on those treaties, and how dangerous it was to have these naive Neville Chamberlain views, of the world. And so that generation had direct experience that made them more cautious. We still engaged in the arms control process and all the rest, and made a lot of mistakes and might have lost the Cold War because they massively cheated then as well. But we believed in preparedness too, just in case these guys were cheating. People like Ronald Reagan came out of that generation, but we don't have that generation anymore. And instead what we've got, are these kids who've been you know, brainwashed into the point of view of Harvard and Yale and their international foreign policy schools. And even under the Trump administration, the people who would be given very important positions in the National Security Council and in the Department of State. And it's a big ego thing, you know, for some young, you know, Harvard, Yale-educated foreign policy major to say, I'm going to save the world by this treaty, you know, and that I'm either going to preserve this treaty like the INF treaty or the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, you know, and to buy into this idea that these treaties are the basis of our security, not the weapons systems, you know. Paper can somehow supersede having a working ICBM system and working ballistic missile submarines, working nuclear warheads, all the apparatus of warfare, you know, to keep the peace. What is the thing that really keeps the peace? Is it our strength or is it these treaties? And, you know, the lesson of history is that it isn't these treaties, it's our strength, but we're constantly being willing to sacrifice our strength. You know, and part of this is the heady experience, I think, for people who get into these positions who don't have a good understanding of history and, would like to think that they're going to save the world, you know, through some
liberal colleges.
And I've got a name for you in terms of another kind of a bad guy, and I had personal experience with this person, a guy named Christopher Ford, okay, who was a mm-hmm. Trump administration appointee, first to the National Security Council. Hmm. You know, I've told you the story about how before Trump became elected president, I briefed him on the EMP threat. And President Trump, who had never even heard of EMP, but he got it. He said, don't worry, Dr. Pry, when I'm elected president, we're going to knock their heads together and get this problem solved. And then he did write an executive order on EMP, you know. And President Trump, also being kind of a creature of our civilization, maybe especially because he's a businessman and believes in contracts, he pretty much thought that when he wrote that executive order, that would solve the problem. Because, of course, everybody in the U.S. government, the president has decided, the president has put out an EMP executive order. So naturally, the government and all of his subordinates are supposed to move out and implement that executive order to solve the problem. And it was an excellent executive order. But it's not the way government works. You know, you can't just, it's very broken. It has lots of people in it, like Christopher Ford, who was working on his own National Security Council staff. And Chris Ford, we didn't know who he was at first, but we found out that, oh, this is great. The president has signed this EMP executive order. But then we started hearing that somebody in the White House National Security Council staff was saying, oh, this EMP threat is really hyped and overblown, and we shouldn't be wasting our time implementing it. Even though the president has written an executive order, you know, we need to act in the best interests of the president here and not go off on this, and put too many resources or give any attention to this particular threat. There are other more serious threats that we need to be dealing with. And we knew that was being said. We didn't know who. So we actually had to do investigative work and making inquiries. And we found out it was this guy named Christopher Ford. And we managed to get in to see him, you know, because we had another friend that Ford was indebted to, because he never would have reached these high heights if it weren't for another friend who had great faith in him, you know, and unfortunately. But this friend basically arranged so that we got a chance to go into the NSC staff and talk to Chris Ford to find out, well, why did he think this? And one of the things I noted immediately was this was in the middle of the Trump administration. And three of Chris Ford's subordinates on the NSC staff were all Obama holdovers. You know, 2 years into the Trump administration, in this particular area, on the National Security Council staff, you know, we had one Trump appointee who turned out not to be a good one, and three Obama holdovers working for him in the White House. And I have no doubt that one of those Obama holdovers had arranged for him to get briefed, probably by other Obama holdovers working in the Department of Energy, you know, that that carry water for the electric utilities. DOE has a very corrupt relationship with the electric utilities, and we've talked
about big pharma and the health, big pharma and the health bureaucracies. Examples of this,
How they don't want to do anything about EMP because it's going to cost money, and also there are some people there who think that they are experts on everything, but they don't know anything about EMP. And Ford, who is a lawyer, he's not a physicist, okay? But he wouldn't even tell us who briefed him and why he had this impression. But anyway, one good thing about the briefing was that I believe he kept his mouth shut. He didn't go back and fix the damage he did, that he did on the NSC staff, you know, because that would be admitting he was wrong, you know, so he wasn't big enough to do that. But at least he stopped criticizing it. And then later on, they had me back in to brief the NSC, okay? But here's an example, you know, of one of these inexperienced people who doesn't know anything about a particular topic. Again, the guy is a lawyer. What does he know about EMP? You know, doesn't know anything about it. But because he wants to be a big man and shine, you know, and stand out on the NSC staff, you know, he decided to take on the EMP issue and did damage, you know, by having a chilling effect on other members of the NSC staff. And I don't know if the briefing that I gave corrected that. I found it interesting that they called me back there on an emergency basis to brief them on July 4th. I had to leave Florida and go up there on July 4th. That was after North Korea demonstrated that it could hit the United States with an ICBM on that day. And maybe it undid the damage, but here, to just continue my Chris Ford story, this wasn't issue. This wasn't the only issue. Okay, then later on, it turned out that, and I hope it's because he got the boot, but he was removed from the NSC staff, and they went over to the State Department, where he had a senior position in the Department of State. Now, most people would consider that a demotion in Washington, and I think it was. You know, so maybe he got punished a little bit for what he did on the EMP thing. But then when the Trump team and the State Department has its own intelligence branch, mm-hmm. and usually the State Department intelligence guys never like to admit that there's any threats. Okay, they usually help because especially if they involve treaty violations. And so they're usually the first ones to cover up anything. But interestingly, there was a group in State Department intelligence that was saying that COVID was coming out of the Wuhan laboratory and that this thing was probably a Chinese biological weapon. And what did Chris Ford do? Well, that wasn't what everybody else was saying. That's not what Dr. Fauci was saying. And here is this lawyer again, okay? Shut up, the State Department's own biological weapons experts on the Wuhan virus, you know, because it didn't fit in with the general line. And he thought, well, we don't want to embarrass President Trump, you know, that he claimed he was trying to protect the president from analysis that was probably wrong because the bulk of the intelligence community, who were all Obama holdovers, by the way, I mean, because Trump never cleaned house, you know, he only had new directors on top. But all these analysts down below were Obama holdovers, and they were saying, oh, it's not from China. It wasn't from the Wuhan lab. It's not a biological weapon. It was probably from bats or something like that. And I know this is one of your favorite topics, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So right in the Trump administration, you had this guy covering this up too. I mean, this one relatively young person did more damage, you know, not being an expert in either of these things, than a lot of people can do in the course of a whole lifetime, you know, slowing down the EMP process by undermining the president's EMP executive order. That wasn't enough to get him fired. It just got him moved over to the State Department. And then steering the whole country wrong on the origins of the COVID virus, you know, not being out of the Wuhan lab. Those are two big, huge, one could call them potentially existential kind of mistakes. And yet he was never fired, you know, ended up retiring with honor or leaving with honor after the Trump administration lost its position. I'm saying these things, this last stuff is now out in the open, by the way, you know, and he's desperately flailing around trying to protect himself because a lot of conservatives and, you know, Trumpers are attacking him for what he did on the Wuhan, you know, by trying to cover up for the Chinese. And he's desperately trying to protect his reputation. But these are the kinds of people, even during the Trump administration, you know, that end up getting appointed to the National Security Council, State Department. It's really amazing the country hasn't been destroyed, this far.
This is the part I understand, especially from a guy who came from a TV show called the Apprentice, and his favorite words were "you're fired." He didn't fire anybody.
Yes.
You know, it's like the Obama administration never left. It's like Trump never really got to have his first term because, despite all the investigations, the real danger. You know, we get past the bogus impeachments and things like that, but the real danger is the fact that I think Obama literally cleaned out, you know, the entire government from the Bush administration, put all his own liberals in. He must have been planning or having, you know, like a wish list of people to staff government with, and just got everybody out. Everybody in, and somehow he was able to keep those people in there during the Trump administration because, as you say, Trump is a business guy. You know, if he, as a business person, if you order a subordinate to do something and they carry this out, they generally carry it out or they get fired. But what Trump never did was he never followed up on that. When they weren't carrying it out, he didn't fire them. He should have cleaned the house immediately. He knew he should have known how corrupt, you know, the Obama administration was, that he was taking over. And you know, I mean, here's the other question too. Where were all the conservatives saying, look, if you don't get rid of these people, you're never going to have any kind of cooperation. They're going to do what they want. They've got their own little kingdoms. They've got their own little, you know, fiefdoms out there. They're going to run things exactly as they see fit. And as you say, unless you get rid of them, you know, these people will do what they please. They'll say one thing, do another, and they think they know best because they're there longer than the president. Trump was there 4 years. These bureaucrats are still there. They were there before him. They're going to be there after him. They don't care. You know, and it makes sense now to see how fast the Biden insurrection has been able to reverse everything Trump did and go right back to the way it was under Obama, because it's basically Obama's continued presidency with a little aberration, you know, with some different leaders on top. But now you're back to, you know, all those folks are back. The Blinkens, the, you know, the Susan Rice folks, all these people that we've gotten rid of, we thought, are now back in. And they're doing exactly what they did before. They're just picking up where they left off. And that's the problem. The Trump administration has been erased, not the Obama, but the Trump administration. Because it's all back the way it was. It's as if Trump never happened.
Yeah, I agree with you. Agree with that completely. I've actually written about that in effect, there never was really a Trump administration. We had a President Trump, but he was trying to run the government with the Obama administration, you know, which is why he had to do everything through executive orders, because, he couldn't get the regulations, that they wouldn't pass the regulations, they wouldn't do their jobs and implement his executive orders. He couldn't get bills out of Congress. So he really only had the power of his personality and his executive orders, because he fundamentally seemed to understand that he had to make the government his own. That people are policy in Washington. People are policy. You can't, they're not professionals in the sense that they're lawyers and they're willing to fight for whatever side pays them, you know, and do an equally competent job. These people are deeply ideological. And, and if you don't fire them, they're going to undermine you. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, this will be interesting to see if Trump runs again and gets back in office in 2024. He should be back in now because a lot of folks are fighting for that. But I'm going to talk about that another time. But it'd be curious to see if he does what he should have done the first time and literally fire, I'd say, two-thirds of the government. You know, because by now you got people so entrenched. That's what I'd do if I were president, and I would start over. I'd have everybody that's been there more than 10 years out, you know, and just...
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But what do you think the odds are that we're going to have another free and fair election in this country? I mean, you know, not the Democrats. I haven't seen anything done that would ensure that we would have free and fair elections again. They're trying to pass H.R. 1 and make it official that the feds will be able to corrupt all future elections so that they'll never lose another one. But they got away with basically stealing this last election.
Well, so
why
far.
why won't they be able to do that, you know, in the future?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Well, this is why I said, and I do an election correction report on Wednesdays here. You know, you're welcome to listen or even call in and join me on that one. But I've been watching this very closely. One American News is doing some great work with it. The key is the Arizona audit. Okay, and the results once they come out. So the Democrats tried their best to stop it. They wanted injunctions against it. The Republicans in Maricopa County on the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors tried to stop it. Everybody's tried to stop it, but it keeps going forward because the Republican Senate, the Arizona Senate, is just, you know, bulldogging this through. They're not giving up for a second. And the longer it's gone on, the more credibility it's gained. So here's where it's going to get really interesting. Once that audit is complete, and it could be as early as next week, all right? And then once they publish the results, it's the reaction and the follow-up from the results that will tell us what's going to happen. Because if other states pick up the audits and say, we want to do this too, now it's going to be a domino effect. If the state of Arizona then says, okay, we're going to rescind the fraudulent Biden electors, and we're sending Trump electors now, that where our vote has been not overturned, but corrected. And the correct result is, based on this audit, Trump won Arizona, and we're going to send Trump people in. That's going to change the elector count. Okay, when that electoral college count crosses 220, because if Georgia does this, Pennsylvania does this, it may only take those three states. I mean, there are others that could do it, but those three states, you know, correct their results to Trump, Biden has no leg to stand on. And then it becomes the next process of who's going to have the gumption to get up and kick him out, because there's not a single – I call them the gelding old party now. So the geldings, you know, Mitch McConnell being the biggest gelding, you know, the geldings in Washington won't do anything. They've never called for his impeachment. They've never called for him to be out. They've never challenged his executive orders, really. They've never passed a resolution or even proposed a resolution to stop anything that Biden has done, which means, as far as I'm concerned, they agree. And these are people I used to respect. Ted Cruz, you know, Tom Cotton, Rand Paul, people like that have not stood up and
they
said.
They, in effect, are acknowledging the legitimacy of of President Biden and that the elections were fair.
Yeah, but the states are going to change that. One of the biggest problems is January 6th. What was supposed to happen January 6th never took place because of the deep state insurrection. That was the real problem. Not true that they blame Trump supporters, but the real problem is they stopped the elector challenge. So that was another place where they could have challenged the electors. So everybody's trying to stop the electors from being changed, but that's where the key is. And so, I mean, obviously I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you what's going to happen, but what I think could happen the way it should go is that Arizona – the results of the audit show overwhelmingly that Trump won. I believe that's going to be the result. I believe Arizona is then going to change their elector count. They're going to say that Trump won Arizona, and that's going to put more electors in Trump's camp and fewer from Biden. So they're going to switch them out. It's not going to be enough to change the election because, you know, Biden will still have over 270. But again, then we have to wait and see. Will two more states then pick up the audit and change their electors? If they do, we get over 270. Now it's going to be a problem because now you know someone's in office who can't be there. So do we leave them in or kick them out? And that's going to be up to the leadership of our country and the courts. And that's the part I don't know. But this is where we are now.
Well, I'll make a modest prediction.
I'll make
a modest prediction that if this starts happening as you anticipate, and they try to change the Arizona vote, that the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice and the FBI will come down on them like a ton of bricks, and they'll claim that this is an insurrection and that what they're doing is illegal and unconstitutional, and they need to put those people in jail, to stop an insurrection. And that's why
that's going to be really interesting. That's a definite. I mean, I think you're right on with that. I think they're going to try and do that. But there's an Arizona senator, and a few folks have already said, if you try that, we're going to put you in jail. So they're actually going to arrest the federal authorities if they come into Arizona to try and do that. I think they've already anticipated that happening, and they already have contingency plans. That's going to be interesting. When's the last time a federal official was arrested in a state? I know it's happened, but it hasn't happened for a long time.
Yeah, and don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to – I hope those people push as hard as they can and do as much as they can, even if the good guys end up in jail, you know, because that will – because the American people and our so-called political leaders in Washington, you know, they need a wake-up call.
Yeah.
That the election was stolen, that we're in a moment here. I mean, we're not a constitutional republic and haven't been since the beginning of the Trump administration with the Democrat Party, engaged in all kinds of illegal activities to try to undermine his legitimacy.
Right. Aided by the Gelding.
We're in the soft phase of totalitarianism, you know, but that'll start transitioning us to the hard phase of totalitarianism. And I don't know what it's going to take something like that to wake up enough of the people so that we get organized and resist and fight back to get our freedoms back. So, you know, I do hope they keep going down this path and that they're prepared to do whatever's necessary, you know, because this is great a threat to our existence as a free, as a free system, as North Korea, Russia, China, you know.
Well, here's – just to change the subject a little bit. I'm glad you stuck around for a while because this is kind of fun. We can talk about radionuclear weapons next time. I think we totally missed the topic that you wanted to get to. But I sent you my timeline. Okay, and I've been building a timeline for months about everything that's going on with the coronavirus. The most recent revelations, if you go back on our show, is the fact that Obama created this playbook, this pandemic playbook. They had a rehearsal of a pandemic the week before Trump takes office. Now, I find that timing rather suspicious. And as I read the article, it said that Trump, of course, didn't want the Obama timeline, but I don't think the timeline was ever intended for Trump. I think it was intended for Dr. Fascist. That was Obama's basically orders for what was going to happen, you know, for when the pandemic strikes that they all agreed was going to happen, you know, in the election year. You know, I think this was all planned out, you know, well in advance, because in that article, in that playbook are things like mandatory ventilator, you know, construction and distribution, mask mandates and lockdowns and all the things that happen, a huge vaccine program. But the ventilators and the vaccine program, the two things that distracted Trump the most were in the Obama playbook. I mean, and this is fascinating stuff, right? So we know that Zuckerberg conspired with Fauci to basically propagandize vaccines, and anybody who said anything different was censored, right? I know that because I was censored. We know that there was an Obama playbook that outlined how to do this, you know, basically, and that was given to, you know, the Trump administration, basically Fauci. That's probably the way that he was allowed to take it. We know that Fauci, the week before Trump's inauguration, said, you know, Trump's going to face it was in Georgetown University speech, right? This is all coming off the top of my head, was saying that, you know, Trump's probably going to face a pandemic in his administration. 3 months after Trump takes office, the guidelines, the CDC guidelines, they went from interim guidelines under Bush in 2007 to the new CDC guidelines, which instead of having a pandemic severity index, that gradually ratcheted up the increasing security based on actual death counts from the pandemic, not with it, from it. They actually had they changed it so they could go to full lockdown based on the bad models of Neil Ferguson over Imperial College in England. 2.2 million Americans are going to die, you know, which actually exceeds a Category 5 pandemic under the old guidelines, right? And so Trump internalized this, believed this, and I think the coronavirus task force was part of the playbook from Obama to get Trump out of the picture and to distract him with ventilators and vaccines. And he thinks he's did this great thing with warp speed. He got these vaccines on the market. I think it's BS. I think those vaccines were already there. Those vaccines were created a year ago by Moderna, which came into existence in 2010. And in 2017, the director of Moderna does a TED Talk saying, you know, we've hacked the software of life. They basically had the messenger RNA technology. I think they created the virus to match the vaccines. I think everybody's looking at this backwards. The vaccines came first. The virus was created in Wuhan because they couldn't create it here. And then when China says, okay, we'll let you create this in the Wuhan lab, but we're going to take the technology as well. You got to share everything with us so we can create a bioweapon out of it. And that's because you know how China takes everything. Boeing built what? When they said they sold Boeing aircraft to China, but they only sold a certain amount. And after that, China made new ones because they got the plans. They said, okay, we can build so many, but we're going to build the rest of them. I know you want to talk. I just want to get this out. But it's all about vaccines. All roads lead to vaccines. Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, I just think that this is another the whole business about Trump's response to the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason I wouldn't want to see him back as president, because he was so easily manipulated and he exercised such bad judgment, whether or not the vaccines already existed. Okay. The money that was spent, the idea that for that he took at face value, that this was the plague. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think to this day, I haven't heard him surprise the coronavirus as the plague, as if it justified the expenditure of trillions of dollars. When I think of what we could have done, to modernize our nuclear deterrent, to protect the country's critical infrastructures from EMP and cyber warfare, he could have done all that with the monies that were wasted, on this thing that is basically not much of a threat, minor threat,
Yeah, the mortality count never went up.
To our country.
National death count didn't increase one bit. It's pretty strange for a pandemic not to cause an increase in the death count, don't you think?
So you're talking about Trump not making the same mistakes if he comes back as president in the happy event that we're able to recapture our free and fair elections. I mean, do you really want him back? Assuming you can get to a place where you can have free and fair elections, something that I doubt. I think the much more drastic steps are going to be taken. What you're describing happening in Arizona is sort of the last of the system trying to work the way it's supposed to, I don't think our one party totalitarian system, we're in this soft phase of totalitarianism right now, sort of the way Nazi Germany was. And, after it got, it didn't immediately become a hard totalitarian system. And, it took a while to get its tentacles around everything and actually did a lot of benign things for the German people, to win their confidence. Oh, this administration can't claim to be doing the same thing. But, what we really need, a second American Revolution isn't just getting a real opposition political party in Washington. And I know you agree with this. We need to get back to the Constitution as it was intended so that Washington doesn't have the kind of powers that it has. I mean, this episode has proven that the founders' deepest fears that Washington would become the new Rome, about the concentration of power in the hands of the federal government. It's worth going back and reading the Federalist Papers again, which I did again recently, to find out that they're wrong on every point, and the anti-federalists turned out to be right. All the arguments that Hamilton and Madison and Monroe were making, that Washington couldn't become a new Rome because states' rights, the sovereignty of the states would prevent that. And if the states didn't prevent it, because people identify with their states much more than they do with the federal government, and they did before the American Civil War, they did at the time the founders were writing, that the people with their Second Amendment rights, they would prevent Washington from becoming powerful. And there are many other such arguments that they make at great length to convince the anti-federalists that, it's okay to move from the Articles of Confederation into our constitutional form of government, we're going to have a more powerful Washington. But it was never intended to become what it is, No personality is going to be able to, is going to be, whether it's Trump or somebody else, in the White House, and no group of personalities in the Congress, I think is going to be sufficient to make the kinds of organic changes that need to be made to get us back to the Constitution, so that most power is at the level of local governments, which is where it should be, where people have more control over what their government does. And then less power at the level of the states, and the least power should be in Washington. You know, this damage has been coming, you know, over the course of a century. It's been built up over the course of a century since the progressive era, you know, and it's going to be very hard to undo, very hard to undo.
Yeah,
if
but
it's possible to undo it at all.
Mr. Smith goes to Washington. You know, the only causes worth fighting are the lost causes, and I don't think this is a lost cause. But I got to let you go in a minute because I have to. Actually, I want to. We have a sponsor here on the show, Santa Rosa Volunteers, that has commissioned me to go over the founding documents, the Federalist Papers, Declaration of Independence, the Anti-Federalist Papers, and I make a couple of minutes. Actually, this one's about 4 minutes, a bit long, but I make a report each week on one of our founding documents. And so it's quite fascinating that you say that. But, yeah, the way to get back to it that I see is to do what I'm doing now at Action Radio, is to create a situation where the citizens are empowered in ways they never thought possible, that they can actually – you know, vote and support legislation written by regular people, that can, once it gets into the media in a big way, and I'm still working for that, then we see what happens. I mean, I don't know, but I see this. I know you're skeptical, and that's okay. Keep watching. It's going to be interesting as a few more years go by to what kind of impact that we can have here. But the people are ready for it. I mean, this is the perfect time in history, given this Marxist takeover that's trying to happen, this deep state takeover, that there's millions of Trump supporters that are disgusted, that want to do something. They just don't know how yet. They don't know how to react. They don't know how to do anything beyond vote and go to rallies and write letters and things. They don't have the knowledge that we have here about this incredible citizen legislature that's never really been tried on a mass scale in any country, any time in history. This is all brand new stuff we're doing here. And this is why I think it's so fascinating. Okay, so let me let you sum up, and then
well,
I gotta let you go, and I gotta play my.
I'm skeptical, but I'm with you.
Okay,
and,
well, good.
I don't want to be a person.
That.
I don't want people to interpret my skepticism as saying, "Oh, the problem is so bad, we're powerless, and we need to do nothing." We must never say that. Mm-hmm. The maxim of the EMP Commission needs to be the maxim for the whole country now.
Yeah.
And it's Winston Churchill's admonition to never, never, never give up, you know? And so we need to try everything, you know, to try to get our country back, everything.
Yeah. You know, and I've been hesitant to call some of the major talk shows like Sebastian Gorka's and Mark Levin's. I know you were recently on his show again because I didn't want to be seen as arrogantly promoting my own show. But we're coming to the point, I think, where if I don't start calling these folks, because I can't get past their staff, if I don't let them know that this is here, that this is possible, and if I can't get the word out through the media that there is a citizen revolution going on right now, it's in its early stages, but we need to jumpstart this big time. Because the Republicans are incapable in Washington of fixing anything. The states is where I think the action is going to be. The states are where, you know, I have the greatest hope, because there's a lot of states, there's like 12 states that visited Arizona. So this is going to go on. It's taking its time. It's working slowly. But I think the fact that the Arizona audit existed at all, that's where the tide turned. This is like the midway, you know, of World War II. So the tide has turned. It's not obvious yet. There's still a lot of battles to be fought. We're not done. But I think that things are going to start to go our way. So let me let you go. I'm going to go into our Santa Rosa Volunteer presentation, which you can pick up on the podcast. Thank you. This has been really interesting. So keep the faith and
be
skeptical.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, my friend.
And I think
bye-bye. Bye-bye,
too. Bye now. Dr. Peter Pry, we get so much time with this man. It amazes me. We had him for an hour. I mean, this is just, it's incredible what we get to do. Whitley reads the timeline. It's in his email there. He's like, you sent me what? You know, it's just, it's mountains of stuff. It's all these different events. And you put them together and you see this entire puzzle. And I have it floating in my head all the time as to all these different things that happen. It's very, pretty amazing. All right, let me play. This is the last time for this one. This is on Federalist 44. And then I'll play a couple more things for you and we'll come back. Anybody wants to talk about, you know, our victory lap here? You know, we said that hydroxychloroquine cures COVID. Everything we told you was right. Okay, we knew we were right. We stood by our convictions. We never wavered. You know, as Dr. Peter Price said, you know, about Churchill. You know, Churchill made a speech before the British were invaded by Germany. And he says, we'll fight them on the beaches. We'll fight them on the streets. We'll fight them in the countryside. We will never surrender. You know, and it inspired the British people, and they, you know, kick Germany's ass eventually. All right, let me play this for you. I'll be right back in a few minutes, and then we have more. Well, we'll see who calls. And now's a good time to call in. 215-383-3832. I'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. A meme came to my attention last week that inspired this week's Founding Moments. It has Justice Scalia in the background, and it says, "The Dems are screwed. The state legislatures can decertify their election results. In all cases. The Federalist, number 44, and then it had a court case, Prince versus U.S., 1997. Federalist 44 was written by James Madison and published January 25, 1788. The title is Restrictions on the Authority of the Several States. This paper primarily deals with provisions in the Constitution that states used to do, which have now been delegated to the federal government in the Constitution. Where states got into trouble before the Constitution was the lack of uniformity in coining money, treaties, credit, ex post facto laws, duties, taxes, imports, exports, trade, and anything that was more confusing with many states all doing things differently. It was a mess. What has attracted all the attention to Federalist 44 these days is Section 3, where it says, the election of the President and Senate will depend, in all cases, on the legislatures of the several states, and the election of the House of Representatives will equally depend on the same authority in the first instance and will, probably, forever be conducted by the officers and according to the laws of the states. This applies directly today to the 2020 state election audits, particularly in Arizona, and the future audits in Georgia, New Hampshire, the continued one in Michigan, and any of the other states currently visiting the Senate audit in Arizona. What is so interesting is that if the states have authority over elections to federal office, then the states have the ability to both certify elections and also decertify based on evidence of fraud. It's not being used as a phrase yet, but we should classify the state election audits as an ongoing investigation of the 2020 election, given that the occupants of the White House should not have the power to do anything until the ongoing investigation is complete, and any actions taken so far should be neutralized. Should the states determine that the audits reveal election fraud, they can decertify their mistake with Biden electors and replace them with legal and proper Trump electors. The federal government has no part in this, despite Attorney General Merrick Garland's partisan threat to throw lawful election auditors in jail, seize the ballots and voting machines, and pull a Stalinist-like purge of lawful state exercise of authority. We are in unexplored territory here, but if Federalist 44 is any guide, then the states have the complete power and responsibility over election of federal officials, be they president, senator, or representative, however long the ongoing investigations take to reach the true and correct election result. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. That's federalistpapers.org. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Kicking up my fifes and drums here. All right. So, you know, I was looking over, I've got all these articles here. I don't know if I want to talk about them or not. I haven't quite decided yet, which is interesting because it's live radio. You have to excuse me for a... Okay, that's better. I don't know if I want to do this because we're rehashing all the stories. Basically, it's the same thing. We were right. You know, there's a thing here that there's an article that Trump you know, was right about hydroxychloroquine and, you know, all these different ones here. Majority of physicians are declining the COVID, you know, thing. The medical profession is not really taking the vaccine. You know, they'll tell you to take it and they'll give it to you, but they're not taking it themselves, which should tell you. It's like an auto mechanic that won't drive a particular car. What do they know? You know, it's one of those kind of things. I've got, let's do something kind of interesting here. Let's break some new ground. And so this is a story. Google funded the Wuhan lab collaborator for a decade. This is exclusive to, what's this website here? Looks like Daniel G. I'm not sure who Daniel G is, but it's kind of an interesting, you know, I guess it's the website We Love Trump. This is good. All right. So Google, it says here, follow the money. That's the only thing needed to figure out the infamous origin of COVID-19. See, I agree. This is why I say the vaccines were the origin. The vaccines were designed first, and then the coronavirus through gain-of-function research was tailored in the Wuhan lab in China, at which point China was able to use that technology for bioweapons. Dr. Fauci was able to use it for marketing because he's a genocidal, psychotic, you know, vaccine drug pusher. And that's how this all went. Article goes on. I should give you the date on this too, and it was Daniel G. 22 hours ago. So this is pretty new stuff, right? Anyway, he says new reports have linked another piece of the puzzle to figure out the number of guilty parties responsible for manufacturing bioweapons. And this latest puzzle piece is a gigantic one. You know, trending, more ants, Google. Yeah, big tech giant Google. Google, it says, in addition to receiving funding from the NIH, the National Institute for Health, Wuhan lab collaborator Peter Daszak received funding from Google for over 10 years. Okay, Peter Daszak, you know, EcoHealth, he was basically the money laundering component of Dr. Fascist. I've got a name for Peter Daszak. We'll take some nasty for him as well. But what did Dr. Fascist says is, we weren't funding Wuhan lab. Oh, no, we were funding EcoHealth. EcoHealth was funding Wuhan Lab, or however it works. Anyway, so again, it's follow the money. But whatever, or EcoHealth was working with, or somehow, anyway, I still have to explore that connection correctly. But anyway, looks like Peter Daszak, you know, and it was paid for by Google. Now, this makes perfect sense. I'll explain it in a minute. The article says it was all deflection, since they potentially played a part in funding the dangerous gain-of-function research that ultimately led to a global catastrophe. Well, of course, that was planned. It says, can we please investigate Google now? I want to investigate Google. Why not? Let's do it. Everybody else is fair game. Let's go after them. And, or he says, or will suggesting that get us censored too? Well, first of all, this is my show, and I'm not being censored. So, as long as I follow the guidelines of Blog Talk, which are pretty simple, you know, then we'll be able to broadcast the truth. We've been broadcasting the truth for over a year. You know, Blog Talk's happy. You know, no complaints. You know, because what we say is, you know, like I say, you don't advocate violence. You don't advocate, you know, nasty stuff, and you're okay. All right. So Natalie Winter has a tweet revealed Google-funded Wuhan Institute of Virology's top research partner, Peter Daszak, for over a decade. Now, why would Google do that? Then Natalie Winter then says, could this explain why big tech silenced debate on the origins of COVID-19? Well, I know why. I know why in terms of Facebook. All right. Facebook, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago when the emails came out, that it was revealed that Mark Zuckerberg and Dr. Fascist worked closely together to ensure a consistent message of propaganda over vaccines. Okay. That consistent message included all the stuff we've talked about, the warnings on the Facebook stories, the censorship, the fact that you know, when you go to try and find we have a private group, the Action Radio Vaccine Project, right? And you can find it and you can join it. We're very selective, by the way, very selective. But the thing is, it's there. But a lot of stuff there, you know, got censored. You know, we had with Dr. Zelenko, we had the Action Radio Dr. Zelenko Coronavirus Clearinghouse. That's been disabled. You know, and all we had on it was truth. You know, we were reporting stories, and yeah, I mean, there are different opinions and variations and things, of course, you know, when it's not all lockstep stuff. But the thing is that we got disabled for, you know, basically putting out there what we thought was the best information on COVID. All right. So that comes along, and here's another one. Revealed, Google and USAID funded Wuhan collaborator Peter Daszak. Google has funded research conducted by Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance, a controversial group which has collaborated with the Wuhan something. Let's see what the rest of it says. I guess the lab there. Yeah. So, and this makes sense, right? So money laundering, you know, you give it to a third party. So EcoHealth goes over there and collaborates with the Wuhan lab. China gets a bioweapon, and we get a marketing tool. And the marketing tool is COVID-19, the virus, right? So that's brought back to the United States. This is why Fauci, Dr. Fascist, was against banning people flying in from China, because he had to get the disease established here, all right? So he got it established here by bringing in people from China, although Trump did ban them. But he found a way. You know, they came in eventually and got the disease going here. And then was the first thing he said? You know, he said, don't worry about it. You know, to make sure it spread as far as possible. And then after the disease has already spread across the country and most everybody's been exposed, all right, and millions of people have already had it and gotten over it, right, then he says, you know, well, we have to lock down. We have to slow the spread. We have to, you know, have mask mandates. And he brought in all these horrible things designed for one purpose only, to make you scared to death of COVID, even though most of you had already had it, already been exposed, and it was never going to be a problem for you. All right. So except for, but Greg, you know, I'll do a Rush Limbaugh, but Greg, people have been dying for the last year. Well, have they? How many of those people actually died from COVID? You know, CDC's figure is about 6% of the deaths they report. And since most of the COVID tests are false positives, it's hard to know anything. So, and we all know the mortality count, the overall mortality count hasn't changed, which would be impossible in a real pandemic, because a pandemic is an additional deaths beyond the regular ones. Well, there aren't any. If there aren't any deaths beyond the regular ones, then how come, where's the pandemic? Well, that's a good question. So Google wanted the vaccine information managed apparently as much as Facebook did. All right. Now they're not owned by the same, you know, people or group, but they work closely together. So what's in it for Google and what's in it for Facebook that they have perpetuated a fraudulent message from Dr. Fascist? Well, money. I'm not in the article. I'm just kind of, you know, making, just sort of talking off the top of my head here. Money. Well, because Google and Facebook are heavily invested in big pharma. You know, so they have a vested interest, you know, in making more billions from the billions they've already invested. And you know how this works. All right. Let's see if I can find more in this article. It just has the same kind of the retweets of, you know, Google and USAID. Yeah, here's this. This is Disclosed TV, one of the many other tweets. Big tech behemoth Google funded research conducted by Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance, a controversial group that has openly collaborated with Wuhan Institute of Virology on bat coronavirus research for over a decade. Now, Bill Gertz, well over a year ago, told us this came from Wuhan. Okay. After a couple of days of research, people found that there weren't any bats in the Wuhan market. Right? But there aren't any bats for 1,000 miles of the Wuhan market. Yeah. So where they get this bat theory is batty. I mean, literally like everything else, just made it up. Okay. Let's see if I can find another article here. Oh, hey, this one, you'll find this interesting too. When it comes to following the money, this is probably titled the show Following the Money. Pandemic emergency spending riddled with fraud. What a surprise. The American Institute for Economic Research, June 17th, article by Daniel J. Mitchell, says politicians and bureaucrats are self-interested conduits for taking money from one group of people and giving it to another group of people. And we call that, you know, redistributing income, right? Milton Friedman famously explained that this is why they largely don't care about how much money is spent or how effectively it is spent. No wonder government programs, agencies, and departments waste so much money year after year, decade after decade. This observation about careless profligacy also applies to the so-called emergency spending. He says, I've written separately, you know, about the perverse impact of unemployment benefits that are so excessive that people have big incentives not to work. And that's true. They're paying people not to work. But that's just one problem with the program. Axios has a depressing report on how the turbocharged benefits were part of the coronavirus legislation triggered staggering levels of fraud. Okay. Criminals may have stolen as much as half of the unemployment benefits the U.S. has been pumping out over the past year. That's according to some experts. Fraud during the pandemic could easily reach $400 billion. Okay. The defense budget, the entire defense budget is like $750 billion, just to put this in perspective. You know, if you take a look at the total amount of money that's been spent on COVID, trillions of dollars for nothing, absolutely nothing. You know, in fact, maybe I should do that again. I'll post that screenshot of how the death count was going to zero shortly after July 4th. It just was, you know, it is fascinating. And then it took this amazing turn, skyrocketing back up again. Wow, what a surprise. All right, criminals, fraud during the pandemic could easily reach $400 billion in the bulk of the okay. Blake Hall, CEO of ID.me, a service that tries to prevent this kind of fraud, tells Axios that 50% of all unemployment monies might have been stolen. Okay, so you want to talk about government fraud, waste, and abuse? If the government wants more money, they should keep track of the money they're spending and stop the fraud. Then they'd have more to spend on legitimate things. Haywood Talcrow, a CEO of Nexus Risk Solutions, estimates that at least 70% of the money stolen by imposters ultimately left the country, much of it ending up in the hands of criminal syndicates in China, Nigeria, Russia, and elsewhere. What a friggin' surprise. Think about that. All that money for companies, all that money, that relief money, all that unemployment money ended up in criminal syndicates in China, Nigeria, Russia, and elsewhere. There's no accounting. There's no accounting for the money. They just spent it. And they don't care. The whole point of government is to spend money, your money, all right? And this is how they do it. USA Today reported on one Nigerian scammer who feasted on American tax dollars. Mayowa, M-A-Y-O-W-A, Mayowa, is an engineering student in Nigeria who estimates he's made about $50,000 since the pandemic began. After compiling a list of real people, he turns to databases of hacked information that charge $2 in cryptocurrency to link the name to a date of birth and a social security number. In most states, that information is all it takes to file for unemployment. And there you go. I can read the rest of it, but you know what's going to happen. You know exactly what's going to happen. All right. Okay, so how come this isn't, worldwide news? This is Yahoo News from June 17th, so just a couple days ago. Right? What are we now, 21st? Yeah, 4 days ago. All right. Alexander Nazarian, national correspondent for Yahoo News, Dateline. June 17th, 2021. Let's get my Dateline track. I had a little fun with this here. All right, Dateline. All right, let's do this again. Yahoo News. Alexander Nazarian, national correspondent. Dateline, June 17th, 2021. Says Washington, for the first time in nearly 15 months, daily deaths from COVID-19 nationwide have fallen below an average of 300 for the last 7 days, providing further evidence that the pandemic is in abeyance across the United States. What is that abeyance? What does that word abeyance mean? Let's look this up here. Abeyance. It's live radio. I can do it. I'm talking to myself here. I know you're out there, but no one's calling, so I'm just going to have fun. A-B-A-Y. Why? Look at a Y. That was a T. A-B-A-Y-A-N-C-E. Abeyance. A state of temporary disuse or suspension. Example, matters were held in abeyance pending further inquiries. Okay, so why don't they say it's over? And this is the part I don't understand. Can't they say it's over? It's in abeyance. It's in a state of temporary disuse or suspension. So they temporarily suspended the pandemic. It's in abeyance. It's kind of walking back a little bit. Damn it, that thing ended back in July, of last year. Am I the only one that's... I'm going to stand by that, too. You watch, okay? This is one of those convictions of mine that's going to come out, probably next year sometime.
Yeah, it looks like the now that we analyze the data and throw out the false positives and the false death counts and we throw out Dr. Fauci's, bad figures, it looks like the pandemic ended in July, after starting in January with a peak in April 15th, okay? See, that's what I've already told you. I've been telling you that since July of last year. So for almost a year, I've been telling you the pandemic ended a year ago. And yet... they're still saying stupid stuff like it's in abeyance. That 7-day average now stands at 286 daily fatalities from COVID-19. Yeah, is that with or from? If it's from, it's 1/6 of that. It's 6% of that. So that'd be 286. That'd be 28. So that would be about 19. 19 daily fatalities of people actually dying, from it. The disease caused by the coronavirus, the last time that 7-day average was below 300 was on March 27th, 2020. So that would be on the way up. April 15th. Okay. Sorry, folks. I've got the screenshot. I'll post it somewhere. Maybe our Action Radio group, which is our public forum. Josie's on the line, so let's find out what's going on. In fact, Josie has some real tragedies. This might be a time to tell your tragic stories of the vaccines if you want. You don't have to, but you've got this. We've got
mind.
Some. We got about 10 minutes. Yeah. Well, make your point first, and then people need to know how bad these vaccines really are. And you've got some really horrible examples. Yeah.
It is bad. It's happening to my own family. We buried my mom's cousin from the vaccine, Pfizer. She had a couple major strokes after the vaccine. And this was in March. We were there happy, you know, with the whole family. And one of her daughters, less than 2 months ago, she checked out in the hospital. She was having a headache and all that, and full of blood clots in her head. And she died last night at 9 p.m. So I'm
so
going
sorry.
To the funeral in Miami in a couple of days when they arrange the whole thing.
Wow.
This is a killer vaccine, and Dr. Judy Mikovits, she's been talking about it, and a lot of the real doctors been talking about it, and people just don't want to listen. And the sad part is all her daughters took the vaccine to protect mom, and it's sad. It's sad. And, you know, nowadays people are having weddings, and they say, well, if you're not vaccinated, you cannot come to the wedding. Well, hello, I'm not going to that stupid wedding. You know,
my friend
in Washington, D.C., they did a celebration of her grandchild, and she said, if you're not tested for COVID, you're not allowed to come to the birthday party. So people are insane. But until their family members start dying from this vaccine, not just from the COVID, the vaccine is what's killing people now.
You know, it's going to kill more people than COVID. COVID's on the way out. COVID's been basically gone for a year. You know, I mean, people are still dying either. Well, here's the thing. Here's what we don't know. Because the records are so bad, you know, because they wanted to use the coronavirus as a marketing tool to sell their vaccines, we have no idea. You know, most of those PCR tests are false positives. You know, so how many millions of false positives do we have out there? You know, and the fact that we post this to our vaccine group, but there's a video anybody can look up on the creator of the PCR test, the one they use for COVID. It was never designed for vaccines. It's an analase fat analyzer or something like that. That's what the test is designed for. He says that Fauci's an idiot and will lie in front of the camera to advance his own agenda. We know that. We know that from the AIDS patients he killed because AZT didn't work. We know that from the different pandemics as we go through. What he's always done consistently is avoided or demonized or banned, you know, drugs that work, but that were, you know, what they call off-patent. That's something I just learned yesterday, the word off-patent.
Mm-hmm.
So the patent's expired, so there's no way to make money on it, or not as much money.
Yeah.
You know, hydroxychloroquine is in common use. It's a generic drug now. You can't patent it because it's already in general use. It's a generic, you know, but it works. Okay, ivermectin, same thing. Did you see the Sunday morning show yesterday, or did you get a chance to watch a video on it? It's unbelievable.
No.
Maria Bartiromo has Senator Johnson on. Johnson's been leading the fight for early treatment. You know, he said, why does this disease have no early treatment? They're actually recommending you go home until you're so sick, you know, you have to go to the hospital and go on a ventilator. Well, that's suicide.
Exactly. One of my sisters, she was one of the first ones that got the COVID, the people that I know, and they sent her home to her three kids and her husband. And then her husband got the COVID.
Of course.
And I was giving her instruction on home remedy, what they were doing in another country, and it worked. But her kids did not get COVID, the three children, not at all. And they were all in the same house, breathing the same disease.
Yeah. Well, everything Fauci did increased the spread of the disease. He talked about slowing the spread, but that was all a lie. Everything he did increased it.
Mm-hmm.
Locking people in their homes with their families increased the spread. Wearing masks increases the spread because it puts more germs in front of you, weakens your immune system, makes you more susceptible. You know, besides the fact that masks don't work, okay? Lockdowns increase the spread because now everybody's stressed out. Their immune system is suppressed. They're not getting their sunshine. They're not getting their vitamin D. They're not in the fresh air. They're not going to the beach. They're not getting exercise. They're not going to the gyms because they're closed. So they're in incredibly stressful situations. You got spousal abuse, child abuse, drug addiction, you know, suicide, everything else is going up. And the disease is spreading because the disease spreads indoors with people that are vulnerable.
Exactly.
The nursing homes.
You're right.
You know,
absolutely.
The nursing homes. They give to nursing homes to spread the disease. So everything was about spreading the disease, creating a panic so they could sell vaccines. So what happened to the Wuhan lab? Bill Gertz, one of the greatest reporters in the country today, was on the show over a year ago saying this came from the Wuhan lab. I've got the recording. We knew it then.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I didn't bother with the origin of the lab. I didn't care about the origin of the virus. I knew where it was came from, but it didn't matter to me because, you know, for months now, I've been convinced that the real question is the origin of the vaccine. And Moderna is where you need to look. That's where I'm going to start looking. Moderna, the company that was created on taxpayer money, that borrowed licenses, Dr. Martin reports on this, all right? I'm looking at some other sources too. Moderna is where the action is.
Greg,
go ahead. Yeah.
Yesterday I was talking to one of the CEOs, because I know one of the CEOs from one of the three local hospitals. I'm not going to tell you which one.
No, that's fine.
He was telling me, I believe in the Moderna so much. I said, you really? Because I was telling him that my cousin was almost dying yesterday. We didn't know what time or when exactly she was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, I don't know about the other two, but I really do trust the Moderna.
Why?
Because I told him, him about my cousin. He said he really trusted, and we didn't have a lot of time. But I said, well, I'm not getting none of the shots, I guess, because I haven't got one in 20 years for the flu, and what makes me want to get something that is not FDA approved? But he changed the subject, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ask
him to donate to Action Radio. That would be a help, you know. You know, some of these local hospitals, car dealerships, lawyers, you know, some of the rich folks around here, you know, they should have helped us out years ago, but that's okay. But now's the time, folks. You know, because we can create a center for citizen legislation. We can change the world right from here. And first we start with the United States, and then we take it elsewhere. I mean, the future is incredibly exciting. But what is this willingness to believe? It's like believing in climate change. I believe. You know, this has become a cult. There's a vaccine cult out there that, you know, and people that have taken it, you know, when I ask them, they say, you probably heard this before. Oh, my family insisted. I felt pressured. You know, I just want to get it over with. You know, it's better to be safe.
You know,
I hear all this
crap. The
latest
that I heard.
What's that?
The latest that I heard is, I have to do it because it's my faith. It's because of my faith. I'm like, hello, what?
Which faith is that?
It's my duty as a Christian. Oh, I just heard one of my friends, she sent me a message. She said, please pray for my two sons because they say it's their duty as Christians to get vaccinated. I said, duty? Duty of the devil, I said, not of Christ. So I was upset when she told me her they're not young kids, three, I believe. They both got the shots, and mommy could not stop them. So, and she knows about it because she's up to date with all the stuff from you and me. Yeah.
Hmm.
So it's very sad how many Christians handed their arm. Can you imagine when the mark of the beast will come? They're going to be ready to go. Here's my hand. Go ahead and mark me.
Here's what
it's
I'm
sad.
Thinking, too.
It's sad.
How many pastors are getting kickbacks from the vaccine manufacturers for pushing the drugs, pushing the vaccines on their congregations?
I don't know, but my pastor has a huge sign about the COVID thing. They're still vaccinating at my church, and I'm very disappointed about that pastor.
Ask your pastor if they're getting any money from the vaccine manufacturers.
I sent him a video of one of the doctors explaining exactly what the vaccine is and what it's going to do and all that, and I believe he already took it. And I haven't got no response yet. And also what's happening when you get COVID, you know, because it's completely, like, gone. You barely don't hear it anymore.
No, you're resistant.
By the time you think you got COVID and go do a test, you have to wait 5 days, and that would be too late to wait 5 days. You cannot do that. So, anyway.
No, and the tests don't work anyway. The tests are inaccurate. No, the best thing to do, if you're sick with something that you don't recognize, and if you have the symptoms of COVID, if you lose your smell and taste, and you have some other symptoms, and it doesn't seem like a regular flu. And yeah, exactly. Now, I didn't, though, when I had it. So I had a really mild form of it. I didn't even have a fever. You know, I just had no voice. That's where it got me. You know, what do I need the most for what I do? My voice. Where did it get me? And I sounded horrible, but I'm sure that was COVID. But like I say, 2 days of rest and I was fine. You know, because I eat healthy and I didn't get enough rest then. I get more rest now simply because, because of you and other folks.
I was sick for 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three, four
yeah.
days. And the fifth day I was dancing. I was back on the dance floor, dancing Zumba. So it didn't
exactly.
bother me.
I took 2 days off. I was working on the third day. You know, I mean, it was crazy.
But yeah, anyway, we've only got about 30 seconds left.
I know.
Let me just say that because of you, and if I can pat myself on the back, and other folks, we were right. We were right the whole time.
Yeah.
And we stood by our convictions, and everybody ridiculed us, and everybody said, you don't have the science, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, if mask mandates worked, then COVID would have stopped. If lockdowns worked, COVID would have stopped. You know, the more they locked down and masked, the worse it got. What does that tell you? So much for the science.
Yep.
Science is observation,
too.
Thanks, Josie.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good. What a great day. Well, I'll be back tomorrow. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Remember our sponsor, Santa Rosa Volunteers at srv1776.com. And if you want to listen to us while you're driving, just get your cell phone on the Action Radio site on your browser, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Plug it into your vehicle. Away you go. And if you want to support us, patreon.com/actionradio. Back tomorrow at 7 a.m. Central Time.